Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 332 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode and season of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this sixth season of Christmas Creeps. I honestly cannot believe we've made it this far. All of my co-hosts have abandoned me this week. But I do have a couple of ringers waiting in the wings.
It's gonna be a stellar year then.
Absolutely, this is gonna be the year where I just wind up talking to myself for an hour.
Oh man, those podcasts can be rough.
I know. I'm not looking forward to it. But to help us discuss tonight's film, we do have our friends from the Secret of the Sailor Madness podcast. Niall and Dwayne are back, guys. Ahoy. Welcome back to the show.
Hello.
Feliz Navidad.
How have your holidays been, or how were your holiday seasons, gentlemen?
I got sick like the day after Christmas, and I only recently got back over it, so okay.
Oh, me too. I'm so sorry.
And I hate it. But no, it's just an excuse to stay indoors and eat tasty soup, I guess.
Jeez, yeah.
It's not too bad, yeah. I mean, other than the sickness, sure.
That part sucks. Mm. The fever sucks, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't sick for it, but I was in at work for most of it over Christmas, because 24-hour TV, you know, someone's got to be there to man the station, even when nothing's really on. But it was an easy atmosphere, lots of, like, snacks and things flying around in the office. Mm. And I got home for a few days around just after New Year's, see the family and stuff, so that was all right.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's great. Lots of fun. I have a large stockpile of holiday beer, and I think it's starting to go bad. So, pardon me if I take a few drinks over this evening. I have to get rid of it.
What flavor is it?
This is called the Shiner Brand Holiday Cheer. It is ale brewed with peaches and pecans.
That sounds alright.
Ooh, sounds the kind of thing where I would enjoy like just one of it at a time, but then nah, I'm good. It's probably way too sweet.
I tend to be on the sweeter end of things. Yeah, that's my preference.
I bought a whole case of it for a Christmas party, and then no one wanted any of it.
Ah, sickening.
I know. Right?
This way does every party. Oh, no one likes the beer I got. Shucks. I guess I'll just have to drink this all myself. Darn.
Darn, gee whiz.
I tried to start cooking with booze this year because I had a bunch of leftover beer as well, but I made some beer batter for fish. The fish fell apart, the oil caught fire, and I was just like, I mean, like the batter was actually nice once I shallow fried it, but I was just like, okay, this is kind of a clusterfuck. I really need to learn this better.
Yeah,
it's dangerous.
But once we had like an actual leftover red wine after our Christmas dinner party here.
I always have a load of leftover wine, yeah.
And I thought, okay, finally, we're going to like actually use this and not drink it. And I made a lovely beef bourguignon out of it.
Oh, very bad. Nice.
Ooh. I will have to try that with this beer. Definitely.
Beer bourguignon.
Beer, ooh. Don't tempt me. Don't tempt me. So, friends, this is technically our Oscar special, because the film we chose tonight is nominated for an Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. It's the Netflix original animated feature film Klaus, which is a very interesting film for a lot of reasons. Guys, had you seen this before we sat down to talk about? Well, obviously you have, but before this.
Oh no, I'm watching it right now. I'll catch up. It's fine.
I read the back of the DVD box. I think that'll probably do.
Not on DVD, you idiot. It's on Netflix.
What? Uh-oh. I guess I was sold a pack of lies that I didn't know.
Sold a bill of goods by Netflix. Congratulations.
Yeah, I watched it for the holidays, and spoilers, I think it's going to be a lock for my fucking holiday watching from now on. I think it won an Annie Award. Was that today? I think it was today.
Just yesterday the time of recording.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no.
I had no idea.
It's doing the rounds all over the shop. I think the Netflix thing is like... it really amuses me that they're going like, hey, we're going to do the very fucking weird rules you have to do to get an Oscar and just release it in some fucking cinema. What is it? Release in a cinema in LA for like a week.
The trial period. LA and New York for a couple of weeks. Mm. And that's good enough for the Academy, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking ridiculous rules.
It makes Steven Spielberg angry, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. Was it Bong Joon-ho? He's calling it a local film festival, which is just like, yeah, super fucking local.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not wrong, but yeah, basically.
Oh, damn.
So it's also up against How to Train Your Dragon Part 3, Missing Link, Toy Story 4, and I Lost My Body.
I Lost My Body and Missing Link are on my list of things I really want to watch. The other two I still haven't watched, bizarrely. Yeah.
No, I didn't even get to How to Train Your Dragon 2.
2 was pretty good.
Even though I kind of fell off.
It's not a series I'm majorly into, but I thought it was all right.
I was a little happy, even though I don't set much stock by the Academy Awards for Animated Feature anyway, that Frozen 2 was sort of this, here's more Frozen. didn't get a whiff of that at all.
Just, I'm fucking glad.
Doesn't that get in by default because, oh, it's a thing Disney made this year. In it goes.
I'm glad Missing Link got in, because I think Laika, even at their worst, they tend to be better than a lot of the general fucking detritus that comes out of studios, yeah.
Hmm. It's been kind of diminishing returns with them, I feel, a little bit.
I think somewhat, they're kind of stuck in like one frame, but I think they have such a unique style and such a unique way of doing things, and nothing else looks like that. Even like other stop motion guys like Aardman don't look exactly like that. Yeah. It's a unique voice, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I say that, but I'm still happy that they're around and doing things.
Right, yeah, and like I stopped caring about this award in particular the year that that Brave won the award over Paranorman.
Oh, Jesus.
And I've never forgiven them for that.
Yeah, Brave is like, I kind of like the setting and some of the character a bit, but it's besides that, it's a bit of a piece of dry toast of a film.
Yeah, it's fine. Mm. Just like How to Train Your Dragon 3 and Toy Story 4 and Missing Link, if I'm being honest, they're all fine.
Mm.
I haven't seen I Lost My Body yet, but then there's Klaus, which we'll be talking about today. And this is a very interesting film for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. So what we like to do on the show here recently is we like to ask one of our guests to explain the plot of this film in 60 seconds or less. This is our 60-second challenge. And the rule is, for every second you do not use, I and this show will donate X number of dollars to a charity of your choice, basically. So I will let you take the reins on choosing where this money goes. But also, I am going to say, Dwayne, take this challenge? Or if you would like to defer to Niall, you can do
that.
No,
fate has chosen me for this terrible task.
Tag me in if you need me.
Oh, God.
I'm waiting. Waiting for the tag.
Okay. Secret of the Sailor Madness. Are you ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, go.
Klaus is a story about a postman who is a real piece of shit. So his dad, who's the leader of the postmen, sends them to shit town where everyone hates each other. And he accidentally invents Christmas with a crazy old man. Am I done?
Damn.
They also learn a lot about, I don't know. No, you don't.
Yeah, that's 13 seconds.
Yes.
Very good, Dwayne.
Oh, so $47 will be going to a charity of your choosing. Congratulations.
I've left a bunch out, to be fair.
Yeah.
No, and we'll get to that, but that's the broad stroke of the story.
Hmm.
But Klaus, I guess, where should we start with this film?
Probably Sergio Pablos.
Yes, I think.
Okay, yeah. The director, Sergio Pablos, who made his name, I guess, got his start working at Disney as a character designer. he worked on things like A Goofy Movie, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hercules, Tarzan, Treasure Planet, and then he got in good with the Illumination crew and worked on all of the Despicable Me films.
Yeah. That was his directorial debut, wasn't it? The Despicable Me ones.
He's down as story for an executive producer.
All right, I knew he was like high up on the end of it. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, and he was like doing characters and things for the other Despicable Me films and ancillary media. So yes, we do have him to blame for Minions, but he's atoning for his sins, his great many sins with this film.
I mean, like the first Despicable Me has a lot going for it. The Minions are there for the little kids, but there's like a lot of heart to the actual main fucking story besides the mascot characters.
Yeah, it was just such a shame that in the second one, it really walked back so many of the great messages I had in the first film and said, no, 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 a family has to have a daddy and a mammy.
Like, ah, you motherfucker, you had it so good in the first one.
Had to keep poking at
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Keep poking the wound. I've mostly known him as like, obviously for a lot of the stuff he did with Disney. He was lead animator on, let's see, Frollo, Hades, Tantor, Dr. Doppler, and Treasure Planet. Just like, I can see he's kind of, his work going through it. And especially, like, you can see the work he did with Disney. And that's the thing he was talking about in interviews, that this is like an evolution of 2D animation. What if 3D never happened and 2D kept evolving the way it was going? And when you look at that list of Disney movies, it's like, oh, I see the fucking, you can trace the line of the development of 2D that he's working on in Klaus.
Yeah, is this trying to with 3D animation, people like have a certain sort of standard, I suppose, for what they want to get. What kind of standard of quality they expect out of an animated feature? So 3D and the adoption of that kind of maybe distorted expedition a little bit, so you know, two-dimensional, even though it could look very, very charming, had a great art design to it, it might still have this sort of subconscious bias against it. So he's trying
it's
to, like,
still more inherently old-fashioned just by looking at it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but still trying to use like all the strengths that have come along with the adoption of 3D and apply that to 2D and just create a look all of its own, but still staying true to the 2D spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's mostly like, you know, you see a lot of things going on both aesthetically, but it's mostly just down to they're using things like volumetric lighting, so things, the characters, they blend in with their settings because they're lit correctly, but whether it be off of a sunbeam or next to a fireplace, and in the words, they don't look like just stencils or kind of, I guess, stickers or frames against, I guess, a painted background. They feel like they got more depth than they actually are more melded in with the scene, and it's an effect I think they've accomplished to a great effect here.
I think with hand-drawn animation, I don't want to say a stigma around it now, but just the stigma of it's so much work.
Yes.
This is an art form that's been, you know, it's 100 years old practically. And there's really only one way to do it. And that's to draw every single frame, you know, every single time. And you can kind of say the same thing about stop motion. Like this and Missing Link both have that very distinct sort of handmade quality to it. Mm. You can tell that like a human hand, an artist's hand touched this product. And that's a quality that is just missing from a lot of CG animation nowadays.
I think, for sure.
It pays off here massively.
It's very important as well, because considering this is a Christmas film, and you're probably going to be watching it with your nearest and dearest like every December from now on, I hope. Just comfy on the couch, it's everyone in a nice cozy environment, and what the look of the film also conveys is a real sense of warmth, even though the setting is, you know, a very harsh northern fishing whaling village. Even
it's trying to get like the idea of winter down, the like just fucking bleakness of winter, and then it's trying to get the warmth of Christmas, and that's the thing. It definitely, I think, with both the story and the palette, it expresses over the course of the movie.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's talk about our main character, Jesper.
What, the main character is not Klaus? yeah
you would think that with that being his name, but no.
Metroid is not the name of the character. Actually, it's Samus. It's a woman.
Zelda's my favorite video game character to play.
I like Super Smash Brothers as well, so. Jesper, who I wrote in my notes about 100 times, his name is Jasper, but that's not correct. It's Jesper, which is the name I've never heard before.
I think it's probably because it's like Norwegian, Swedish is probably why.
Jesper, we'll say.
That makes sense, yeah. Because this whole thing, it takes place in the extreme north of, you know, upper New England, Norway. In the Norwegian north, where there are still, you know, an indigenous tribes hanging out on the ice floes and whatnot.
Yeah.
Which we see in the film.
Yeah, that's a Smearenburg, or it's Smearensburg, I think. It was one or the other, but it was actually a real whaling village. It's one of the most northernmost human settlements in history, and it was a really prosperous place in the Middle Ages, but it's now just a bunch of ruins in the middle of the ocean.
And I assume the people there are quite lovely and not nearly as bad as they seem it is.
Right, because this town, instead of having, instead of being a town full of people just like Klaus, it's basically populated by the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Yeah.
Almost explicitly, that's what this town is. It's one family feuding with the other since the dawn of
Apparently. Forever. Their grand history of just beating the shit out of each other.
Then Jesper comes in, thinking he's fucking Clint Eastwood in a fistful of daughters, trying to play off both sides by tricking their kids in the posting letters to Santa.
Yeah. So Jesper's there because his dad is like the postmaster general of Norway or something. Or at least he's the head post guy. And his dad has like great hopes for him. It's like, postman is in your blood, but you know, you're really being a dick about it.
You're lazy shit.
Yeah, basically. He's using his station to just fucking laze about the place. So his dad has given him the hardest job of opening the post office in, I was going to say Salzburg. Fucking wrong place. In this shithole town that, like, everyone fucking fights, so they're not really much for sending nice missives to each other. And if he can send, what is it? If he can stamp and send, like, 6,000 letters within a year? I don't know if that's like a reasonable 6,000 number of letters, but I've been like, okay, I figure it's a big enough town. Yeah, that sounds reasonable, maybe.
Well, for one postman, it's a hell of a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. I don't know how many letters a postman's supposed to get through in a day, but that seems like a lot. But
I'm going to guess somewhere between 1 and 8 million.
Yeah.
And this takes place at a time before people had bills to pay, so nobody is putting money in the mail.
Yeah, yeah. Sending packages and sending, like, dearest mother, how are you? You know, like, that kind of thing. But this isn't a very polite town, so the only thing they're sending to each other is violence.
The whole postman thing, though, becomes also an analog, a thing for a communication.
Exactly.
If these people just, like, talk to each other, they see they got a lot in common. And so, through these messages flying back and forth between from all the kids, and, hey, the kids are, you know, doing some good about town, like about the community, like cleaning up the place, taking all the harpoons out of the walls, and doing all that stuff. It becomes like a bridge from one side to the other, just like communicating at last properly, like human beings.
Right. The kids are the most impressionable ones, so he reaches out to them first with the promise of toys and the thread of coal in the form of basically inventing the Santa Claus myth. That's more or less what the plot of the film is that Jesper concocts this scheme to trick children into mailing letters so that he can get out of this town.
Yeah.
But then along the way, he basically invents Christmas and decides that he actually loves it.
I really love this idea because he starts off as a really detestable piece of shit character. Not that he's actively an asshole, he's just such a fucking... A guy who's like resting on his family's laurels and shit like that, and is like, he should get stuff done. And he's very like, I'm a trickster and I get people to do what I want. And he's only creating all this goodwill by accident as a way of making enough, not money, sending enough letters that he can go back to his cushy fucking lifestyle.
But then this improves the welfare of the community as a byproduct.
So it's like he's accidentally creating good when he's actually out for very selfish reasons. And it's the idea that even when you do good for it's like the thing of like, if you give to charity, you're just feeling good about it, so it's not a truly selfless act. It's like, yeah, but you still give to charity, so that's still a good thing. You still made the world a better place, even if you just did it to make yourself feel good.
Yeah, like, who cares, like, if Santa Claus is real? If he didn't, like, what if we improve the world for the better and it's all for nothing?
Well, then you've still improved the world, but Santa Claus is attention, kids. Santa Claus isn't real, so yeah, what are we doing here? And then the world descends into chaos. But no, one of the first things that Klaus says in the film: a true selfless act always sparks another. And it turns out that that's even true if your motives are entirely self-centered and craven. And you know, not in the greater interest.
Like,
of the
basically, his invention of Christmas starts as a commercialization thing. It's out. It's for him to make. It's for him to profit off of him specifically, and no one else, and he doesn't care. So it's entirely the commercialization of Christmas leads to the goodness of Christmas. It's like a backwards kind of thing that people say is like, oh, Christmas these days is all about spend, spend, spend. It's like, that's not necessarily a bad thing, though.
Yeah, when coming up with the story, Sergio Pablo's just sort of summed it up that, what if all that's good about Santa came about because of the actions of the worst human being I can conceive of?
Is that true? Is that really what he said?
That's what he said, yeah.
Oh my god. That's beautiful. But I love that one scene, like the first scene where he sort of gets this idea into his head where like the one kid draws a picture of how sad he is to be like
the kid doesn't even know he's drawing his sad situation, like his situation, like it's like I've just drawn from reality, that's my art, and he doesn't realize it's like, dude, you live in a real fucking ass situation there. Himself behind bars in this horrible house, and it's just like the kid's like, hey, can I have my cool drawing back?
And yeah, and then Jesper says like, well, I could mail it back to you for a penny, and then he's standing next to the mailbox and the kid just says, couldn't you just put it in the mailbox? but that wouldn't be a grift now, would it?
Come on, kid. It's all about the public good. You want to support your local civil servant, don't you?
Oh, dear.
He makes his way up the mountain to where Klaus lives. And Klaus has, you know, a wall full of homemade wind-up toys and things like that. For some unknown reason, we learn this later on, but Jesper hatches a scheme to, you know, deliver toys to the kids who ask for them in exchange for postage and money so that he can goose his numbers and get out of town.
The initial, but, like, I guess, act of goodwill isn't inherently Jesper. It's actually Klaus himself who goes like, oh, a kid has said, I will give him one of these toys I have lying around. Mm. Maybe that will help fill the empty hole in my heart that we'll get to later.
He's just kind of guided around all of these happenstances. That's the... A gust of wind will, like, you know, throw up the snow, and then the letter will, like, land right in front of him, and then he just listens to that because, oh, he probably has a very serious reason for why he lives alone in this house full of toys, and it cannot be a happy one.
I just love how much of an axe murderer he looks like at the start. That's pretty great.
His
look doesn't soften, like, it's just you kind of start seeing the emotion more in him as the film goes on.
Yeah. Right, you understand him. Yeah. As the film goes on. But also, the first, you know, act, the first half hour of this film is a straight up horror film.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
A horror film for kids. But it is genuinely like, it's got a very Tim Burton kind of edge to it. you see the kids of these two families, and they just look like serial killers.
My favorite is those kids building the snowman, and they're slowly pushing the carrots into the screaming fucking Calvin and Hobbes snowman.
Yes!
Not breaking eye contact, just like dead eye stared. As well as there's two old ones who were definitely carrying around bodies from house to house.
Yeah, they're definitely going hiding
inside,
murders.
Entering into the the hut, the psycho. Shh.
See nothing.
This is secretly a very grim movie.
It gets better, so I guess that's good.
It does.
Yeah, it gets better once all the drive-by harpooning is died down.
Well, one of the things that really kicks this thing into gear is that, you know, as the children are bringing Jesper these letters for Santa, all of a sudden this one small child who does not speak English or does not speak their language shows up, and no one could really figure out who she is or where she came from or why.
Well, they know she's one of the Sami, one of the traditional tribes who live up north. I think they're mostly around Finland and northern Norway.
Yeah, I think they cross between Norway, Sweden, Finland, like, because they're natives there. They don't really ascribe to, it's like, are you Finnish? It's like, no, I'm Sami. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. They could probably tell more so by her attire than it's the traditional garb that they adopt, which is nice. They aren't made to conform to everything else. They speak their own language. They are depicted as they are in actual life. And they perform part of the Santa legend as well because they're the helpers at the workshop. But they're not, like, I suppose, diminished into being just the elves, this subclass of workers. They're actually there actively helping and getting things done.
Right, yeah. And that's part of the story that I actually had to go and educate myself about, because I didn't know anything about, you know, the Sami people or that part of the world in general.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I really had to learn something about this very quickly.
There's a lot of native tribes, depending on where you go in the world, that are just like not, well, definitely ignored by fucking history, if not straight up screwed up by it. But yeah, if you're not like local to the area, then you don't learn. And I do like the what do they call that shit where they sneak in something and it's like, oh, I want to learn more about this, and then you look it up and it's like, ha, I made you educate yourself, idiot. It's definitely one of those things that makes you go like, what's the deal with these Sami guys? And it's a thing I did myself as well. So it's good. Yeah. I enjoy when things do that. They make you curious about the world around you, even if it's like even if I'm never going to interact with or talk to a Sami person. I am now more aware of their situation, and that's good.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Also as well up around that part of the world is Lapland, where they actively celebrate and do all the traditions involving Father Christmas or Santa Claus, or as they would know him, St. Nicholas. And a lot of the traditions we associate with Santa Claus, the sled and the costume and everything like that, often originates from there or is kind of parts of it or all rolled up into legend. But that's kind of it, the Santa Claus thing. It's everything. It's got a little bit of everything from a lot of cultures around the world that's just been kind of adopted up into it. Mostly it was probably bullcrap. But that's kind of as well, yes, we're going around the town, the kids are talking about, hear about Santa, he does this. I hear if you hang your stockings by the chimney with care, he'll put presents in them. And then, that's a good idea. A little nice little detail, a little wrinkle to put into this whole legend.
He does also get insanely jealous that everyone's just like, oh, did you hear about Mr. Claus? He can like sneak down your chimney and shit. He's like, motherfucker, that was me. I had to climb down your goddamn chimney. Get away from the attack dogs.
He's as big as a house, but he can fit down any chimney. What? No. Man.
It's kind of funny as well, because originally Jesper was going to be a chimney sweep character. And the fact he just goes down all the chimneys and as well. So it's like, oh, that's probably what they intended from the beginning for him.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes sense, but I could see that being a little convenient. And yeah, nothing about Jesper's situation should be convenient, because he definitely deserves to be here.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you're kind of thinking, it's like, you kind of deserve to never live in the life of luxury that you had before. But what I kind of like about their creation of the Christmas legend is a lot of it is like, obviously they've set up a thing to be the legend. But like, it's kind of a rival of circumstance, and you can see how it fits in. Like, he decides he was going to deliver a present. He's like, wait a minute, that's that kid who threw a fucking snowball at me. And he just sees the coal by the fireplace that he just snuck in. So he's like, fuck you get coal. And then that becomes part of the legend, and he fucking plays into that. So it's everything that he adds to it, or that he adds to it, or gets added accidentally to it, is it occurs naturally in the story. I think it works quite well for it.
I like those highlighting of those unsettling, you think about them for more than a minute, aspects of the Santa myth. It's like, this guy can break into your house without you knowing whatever he wants. And thank God he just leaves presents. He could do anything to you, so you better be good.
He could leave trash in your living room and you would never know until the next morning. But also,
that's the best person you wake up at all.
He does carry a battle axe, of course. But the kids, like, after that scene, they don't go around town, you know, painting fences and cleaning up the town for fear that Santa Claus will give them, you know, coal. It walks a very fine line, because there's definitely that hint of like, well, we have to do this or else Santa Claus will put us on the naughty list. But it's actually genuinely, you get a sense that these kids genuinely want to make the town a better place.
Yeah.
And, you know, once that snowballing effect begins, it's kind of hard to stop until the crumbs and the Ellingbows decide to put a stop.
Yeah, it is a very fine line to walk, but I feel like they do a good job of, like, one kid's just writing, is like, hey, dear Mr. Claus, I polished my dad's clarinet, so I think that's a good thing, so can I have a toy, please? And it's kind of like, but the dad sees the clarinet, and he's like, you know, I haven't fucking seen it shine that good in years. And it's instead of, like, blowing it really hard to piss off the neighbors, he's like, I was just going to jam on this thing. I used to fucking love doing that. That's why I picked it up in the first place. And it's like, the kid did it for a little bit of a selfish reason, but he did a good thing that made the world slightly better and improved and improved and improved. And yeah, every good act makes another.
Right. The
one good turn deserves another. I mean, even
the cause and effect. Yeah.
Yeah. Just thinking on a basic level, like, as well, just the child to get like a new toy, like maybe like a new skipping rope or a ball. And that, well, you're going to need someone to play with, right?
So exactly.
Go ask one of the kids out on the other side of the fence, and then snowballs out from there and then spreads around to other people too.
Mm.
Right, yeah, the segregation kind of breaks down at that point, and then, you know, everyone gets to benefit from this kind of thing.
And I like the basis of their society is based on hate, but it's just like, yeah, you stick a little bit of niceness in that out of entirely selfish fucking reasons and shit, and it's like, yeah, hate doesn't fucking stand up to kindness. It really fucking can't. Kindness is much more appealing.
It infects it and destroys it.
And they don't even know why. It's just what we've always done. Yeah, but like, when? Why?
Well, the kids ask why, and then the old lady shows him a cave painting. This has been going on for thousands of years. Don't you understand? But why?
Yeah.
I also love the little detail that they have in the town square, a bell, and anytime anyone rings it, it's just game on. Everyone starts fighting
each other. That's the bell that we use when we want to do a full-on brawl. Yeah.
The brawling bell, yeah. It's so many good little details that are woven into this film. Like, every little piece really just makes it shine that much brighter.
As far as, let's say, what kind of themes and so forth like that, it's probably the last thing that you'll probably be able to see, like a mile coming from a mile away, sure. Like, you know, how certain storylines are going to turn out.
Sure,
oh, yeah,
sure.
It's going to be like the whole thing where they like revealed, Jesper was only doing this good deeds as part of his effort to get out of here. He seems a bit disingenuous, but actually, no, he's learned how to be a kind, an altruistic person over the course of the film.
Hmm.
And then, you know, oh no, they're having this big rift between them. But then, like, they go ahead with their plan for Christmas Eve, which the Crumbs and Yeti Boys try to stop. And he busts in, and everyone's saying, wait, I'm sorry, I apologize. And he kind of fucks everything up. But then they just, like, saying, wait, that was a decoy sled. Oh, yeah, we should have got the weird presence right here.
I love that bit where it's like,
my big rescue, fun saying, like, we knew you were coming, man. Like, you know, we knew you probably messed this up, so we planned ahead. But it wasn't entirely useless. You know, we accept your apology. You're actually all right. You've been
like, he comes in to save the day, but all the other characters, they have shit going on besides you, man. You might be the main character of the movie, but they have their own shit going on, and they have prepared for this event. They've already saved the day before he even arrives. Yeah.
Right. All of these other people have their own agency, and they are perfectly capable of solving this problem without him. However, they definitely account for the fact that he might show up and try to make amends, and that's okay.
Yeah. Like I say, it's something you would probably, you know, be able to see a mile, like, I'm coming a mile away. But the sentiment is still genuine, and it's still the execution, I suppose, is what counts in this sense.
And there's a little bit of the Grinch in that final action sequence where the sled's rolling down the hill off toward a cliff. And all Jesper can do is hold on for dear life and hope that it doesn't go over. And I know Jesper's heart doesn't grow two sizes that day, but he still nevertheless is able to save a fake Christmas.
He's able to save a relationship is kind of the more important thing that he built up over the course of the movie. Mm-hmm. And he inadvertently ruined by being the piece of shit he was at the start of the movie.
Of course.
Yeah, but they know that people can change and learn. They're not going to pity him for the rest of his life for this one mistake that he made in his past, which again is something that people could go about learning. You know, people will fuck up in your life, and it's up to you whether you're able to want to forgive them or not, but maybe you should give them a chance because they probably would like to atone for what they've done as best they can. It's about Christmas, after all, about setting all that aside coming together in a spirit of warmth and friendship.
Right, it's a lesson that's, you know, it's a worthwhile lesson to put in a film like that, and it's also not entirely even the main point of any of those sort of redemption scenes, but it's also just, again, like all of the goodwill that's been spread around, the good cheer, it's kind of a side benefit.
Yeah.
Like, it's on top of, you know, him, Jesper, redeeming himself, everybody else kind of gets the benefit of being able to forgive and forget, so to speak.
Yeah, like, being good can be hard work. It could be, you know, having to go and make amends with your worst enemy, or it could be just, yeah, we got to make a lot of presents. It's a lot of hard work, but the effects of it, while it's all going towards, makes it more worthwhile. It's more than just this chore you have to do. It shouldn't feel like a chore. It should be something that you do regardless. There's something like well, goodness, you know, as a thing. Goodness is doing what you know to be right, even when everything is telling you you shouldn't do it, but you do it anyway. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. And also just that drive to do the hard, put the hard work into being a good person and making your community a better place. That's also sort of the impetus for this film. Like, it's, they knew that putting in the hard work of doing hand-drawn animation was going to be tough, but they did it anyway because that's what they love to do, and they know the end result is worth it.
And you make the world a better place by doing it, yeah.
Yeah, and they were trying for so long to get this thing made. Mm. Like Sergio Papa was talking, it would never be made. It's because, well, as this time passed, but then Netflix said, we're not looking for a Christmas movie. We're not looking for an animated movie right now, but they're looking for more Christmas stuff. So just see what you got about this whole Klaus thing, and it panned out for them. But that being said, they wanted a lot done quickly, and also it being a Christmas movie put them under tremendous pressure to get it finished before Christmas of 2019.
Yeah, yeah.
So to have it up on the platform for people to enjoy at home.
Right, and I'm also sure that a lot of the budget for this, the $40 million budget, and I'm sure a lot of that came from Netflix, but also went to securing a, if not an A-list voice cast, then at least a respectable voice cast.
Yeah, yeah, some name, recognizable name, certainly, yeah.
Yes. I think Jason Schwartzman is probably the perfect choice for Jesper. He's good at playing this feckless, selfish Aegis. So who else are you going to cast as Jesper?
Well, yeah. he is, but for the entire film, I swear, I thought it was Edward Norton.
Maybe
that's on me. Maybe that's on me.
It's probably because they both appear in Wes Anderson films together a lot too.
Conflating them
in your head.
Because Edward Norton does kind of play that character in Wes Anderson films. But then you've got as Klaus, you've got J.K. Simmons with that great sort of deep bass.
Yeah,
voice.
He's great. Like if I wasn't paying attention, I wouldn't have recognized him. When he's talking more so later, you can hear the kind of timbre of his voice. Mm. But like in the kind of gruffness, you're really not picking it up. He can disguise it pretty well despite the deepness of it. Yeah.
Do you guys over there, do you guys get the M&M commercials?
See him occasionally.
Occasionally, but I rarely watch TV.
Okay. Well, J.K. Simmons for the last like 20 years or so has voiced the yellow M&M.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's that very famous, you know, Christmas one where the two M&Ms surprise Santa Claus and then he passes out. So J.K. Simmons has played the yellow M&M and also Santa Claus, which is fantastic.
Just when you update that ad, you just play the whole thing.
Oh, you play against himself, yeah.
Just let him play the red M&M as well. Like, Billy West, get out of here.
J.K.
Simmons is the only guy we need. He's a man of multiple talents.
You have an Oscar winner right here. You're saying he can't play every character? But then also you've got, we haven't even touched on this character yet, Alva, the school teacher.
If anything, yeah, like,
voiced by Rashida
like
Jones.
Definitely the third character in it, because she has her own arc and everything, and it's pretty well done.
Yeah, it's as well, this is the way kind of Jesper could have turned out if he didn't.
Yeah, yeah. How he could have turned even worse.
Yeah, because Alva's a teacher and she came to this town to run the school, but the families are constantly fighting with each other, so they don't send her children to school. So just to try and make ends meet, she's now also the fishmonger, and she's just trying to make enough money to get the fuck out of here and start up somewhere else. But she gets pulled in to the Santa Claus con as well, because the children don't want about letters, but they don't know how to spell their names or write at all. So they had to go to school to learn how to write, and then, again, that's creating a social good, because she's kind of gritting her teeth, but spending her savings getting like paper materials for these kids because they actually actively want to learn and better themselves. Again, for kind of getting presents off of Santa Claus, but they're doing the right thing, maybe for the wrong reason. We're just doing the right thing, and that's what matters.
Also, that's a very real world detail too, because I know a lot of teachers who spend their own money to buy school supplies.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the school departments won't provide that sort of thing for them, and that's terrible. But you know, so putting that in here really kind of makes Alva a little bit more. I don't want to say human, because obviously she's human, but a little more
definitely
relatable.
More humane than she is at the start of the thing, where again she appears to be some kind of monstrous murderer. Like a lot of the characters seem at the start.
She just hasn't had a lot of people come by her lately. She's not used to, like, was waving a knife very absent-mindedly while making a point.
Well, just like the entire look of the school thing. And again, it's a, they do a very well with the town as well. But her schoolhouse is initially like just strewn with fish corpses, and like the globe has a bunch of knives in it. It's just a knife block, and the way that slowly changes as yes. she's teaching the kids. Where it's like, I don't, the fish thing, I'm going to let that go. And it's like, being a school teacher is rad as fuck. This is the thing I wanted to do. And it's one of those character arcs that's, she starts one place, ended, like, became another thing by the start, at the start of the movie. And then she ends up in the place, like, where she started, where she has the passion for the thing that she wanted to do with her life again. So it's like a reigniting of her initial character concept rather than learning something new. It's like going back to what she wanted to be.
Yeah, it's never too late to, I guess, maybe fulfill your dreams, or even just it's never too late to make something more out of your life. And that applies for Alva, but also for Klaus,
yeah, exactly.
too, because he's been the lonely widower who unfortunately with his wife, they planned to have just lots of kids. And he made it, eventually made all the toys for, but it didn't work out for him. And then his wife passed away, so he's left alone in the hut by himself. But by getting into this thing with Jesper and giving to the children, this of himself, they've kind of all the children of the world have children now. He's more than you could ever ask for. Mm. And like giving and being this jolly father figure to them, who even though I see him once a year, is just fills him with a new sense of meaning in his life as
the,
well.
The timbre of J.K. Simmons' voice and the physical acting they get with Klaus is fucking amazing. Because initially, he's such a big fucking scary looking motherfucker. And he's all like grunts and one monosyllabic fucking words and that kind of thing. But at the start of it, you can see he's not well in the head. He's in a very fucking dark place, and he's like, he can't bring, when he starts talking, he starts bringing things up that start hurting him, and he has to stop talking about it. And you can see him like heavily breathing, kind of like trying to process the emotions. But when he kind of reveals all of that backstory to Jesper, it's just this constant human interaction, even with this one asshole human, is kind of opening him up, and he can tell him the entire story without getting upset about it again. Because he's kind of come to terms with it. He's kind of like, I have a new purpose for living. And that's, even if that's just for now, that's enough for now. That's really fucking amazing. I mean, like, I got very upset fucking watching that whole shit. But I'm glad he managed to get to a point where he could talk about it without getting very upset.
It's an extremely emotional arc for this kind of a film. Because, even at the end, That coda at the end of the film where like time passes and they continue to do the Santa Claus thing and they're both visibly getting older is like, it's such a nice little scene. And then Klaus just, I mean, spoiler alert.
Super spoilers. We're spoiling Klaus this whole fucking thing. It's fine. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm trusting that people have watched this already, but yeah, Klaus just kind of vanishes. You know, he's called away to, I guess.
Returns to the planet.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It struck me as like a very Old Testament kind of thing, like the story of Enoch and how after a certain point in time, God just took him away. He never died. He just got taken away. Mm. And Klaus, that kind of happened with Klaus, but also then the film is very cagey with like, well, then something magical happened, and now he actually is just the Santa Claus that we all grew up knowing. Because
it's like 12 years, or something like that, 12, 15, I can't remember.
Yeah, 12 years.
They're doing the Christmas thing, and they're expanding to other towns. And then it becomes something different, but based on the things that set up in that legend, or at least that becomes part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like something spiritual happens. They don't overplay that hand. They could have explained it, which would have ruined the whole thing, but they kind of play it very delicately. And I appreciate that.
You could think of what he sort of what transcends into, what he ascends into being is just becomes the Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
Whether or not he actually becomes this like mythical figure who actually comes to your house at night and drops presents off. But he is this thing that comes around once a year, and it fills you with a sense of goodwill and joy and this more openness to being kinder to your neighbor. So whether he's real or not, he exists in a way inside all of us. If you hold a tradition like close to your heart,
he becomes, you know? Christmas.
Yeah. Definitely the feeling or the idea of it rather than the specific character. But he, yeah, probably yeah, the specific character, but it doesn't, like you say, define it as that.
Yeah, it's all like the story that they make up is all based on these very small, innocuous details that get just blown up and exaggerated into myth. Even if it's a little thing, so Santa really enjoys cookies, that's just something that Jesper put in because I wouldn't mind a biscuit when I'm climbing out.
Because he robbed their fucking food as he was delivering them free presents, basically. He's like, cookie for me. Yeah.
But these are all those little things. It's like, you know, like a sled that can fly. Yeah, there was one time they were doing a chase in the Ranger sleigh and had to take this off some sweet jumps.
They start with a horse and cart, and then the horse eventually can't bring the sheer amount of presents that they're doing, so they switch to reindeer and the wheels get broken. And accidents make them fly through the air, and it's like one kid sees it and tells every other kid. Yeah, it's like an escalation of parts of it, and it works really well for it. Yeah.
And it's every little detail along the way is just perfectly kind of seeded to build out the myth of Santa Claus. Like it's almost like the thing that people complain about with like prequel movies, how like we don't need to see how every little thing got started. But then here it just works because that's kind of the magic of it, I guess.
That was the other thing Sergio Pavlos was trying to do, I think, trying to create an origin story for Santa. And I think he said it's like it hasn't been done before. And I was like, I'm pretty sure a lot of people have done that before, but
just lots of it.
Yeah. But I think the way he does it here, like you say, is very successful. Isn't like, you know where this is going. You know they're not going to stick with horse and cart for the entire time. We did see some fucking reindeers earlier. And it's just like, okay, so I can see they're going to use those reindeers because I know how this story turns out. But it's to see it slowly get there and to see the natural progression of it get there. It does it very well. Yeah. And it's very enjoyable to watch as well, rather than you just going like, eventually Spider-Man's going to shoot webs. I get it. Just fucking get to that part. It's like, no. Let us slowly build towards that and it'll be more rewarding for it. And yeah, this film does a really good job of that.
So this is the beginning of the Klaus cinematic universe. And in the sequel, he will have to go up against an evil businessman played by John Lithgow, and he will have to ask Ernest to save Christmas for him, and like this is so we could tie all of the Santa Claus movies together with Klaus being sort of the linchpin that starts the whole thing, and then everything spreads out from there.
Man, based off that, this is a prequel that the sequels that they made beforehand. I feel like the prequel is the better one. That's an unusual fucking circumstance. Yeah,
this is all working backwards from Rise of the Guardians, and they'll get each of the origin stories until they formed their holiday super team. Because he's a big giant ripped Santa, very physically intimidating. You know, he could have.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
got some tattoos along the way, started dueling sabers and stuff. You know. Next one coming next year, Easter Bunny Rising.
Oh man, call me when the Tooth Fairy movies come. Wait, they did that with The Rock. Oh my god.
They're very subtly doing it, much more subtle than Marvel. Yeah.
Yes, but I mean, we're having fun with this, but like I don't want to tease it out too far because somebody might go,
oh god, yeah, that'd be the worst, wouldn't it?
would this actually be just terrible? Absolutely terrible. The start of a Klaus trilogy. No, thank you. This is as much Klaus as the world needs.
Oh, I want to see more stuff from Pavlos and from the studio and from this kind of style of animation. I want to see more of that.
Oh, certainly.
But I don't need a sequel to Klaus. I know what happens afterwards. No. I live in planet Earth. It's fine.
Yeah, but they are hoping as well that what they've shown that can be done, the techniques that they've employed can be used for something like this on a platform like Netflix in this day and age. So maybe just the success of this, which I thought 2D animation or the films they wanted to make just were nearly impossible for somebody to pick them up. But maybe now, because there's lots of streaming services besides Netflix and other things that want content of any shape and size, so there could be more openings there for anybody with a dream like this, with a little idea in their heart.
Absolutely,
get their chance to make something like this because they show this can be done, and it can be we can show how modern and how innovative that this art form can be. It's not just you don't have to settle for the sort of very, I don't know, I wouldn't call it copy and paste, but they all seem very, very similar looking 3D CG things where they're going for this certain style, somewhere between like very realistic backgrounds and settings, but very cartoonish characters, and it can seem kind of incongruous sometimes. As well, he's wanting to say as well that animation isn't just this. It's a lot of different things, a lot of different styles. It can tell a lot of different stories. Yeah. So it's not just the big things you see in the cinema.
Like I'm definitely going to see like some commercial projects that use this kind of style in the same way that I'm expecting a year or more down the line to see some commercial things that try and ape Spider-Verse and whatnot. But like I love the fact that, and you were saying it all, it's really funny that this thing talks about like the commercialization and greed can actually lead to something fucking good, because that's literally what happened with Netflix. A guy had a fucking dream for a really thing to continue the evolution of 2D animation and the way he was seeing it going, but it kind of stunted for a little bit, and a big corporation that just wanted to make a bunch of money and keep people's subscriptions coming in was kind of like, yeah, we'll give you money, just make us the thing that will get us more money. And they made art out of it. It's weird.
And it's a real shame that Netflix doesn't share their ratings.
Oh, I'd love to see the
numbers
on this.
Unless it's a gigantic hit. I would love to know how many people watch this over the Christmas holiday and like what that translates into as far as like a success or not, because you know, obviously people pay for their Netflix subscriptions, but they don't pay per film. So I would love to know what that translates into as far as like Klaus's sort of reach and appeal. Like, I want to know if this was, you know, a hit over the Christmas season, or if it was just kind of a thing that flew under the radar and we'll maybe never see again.
Yeah, Netflix throws a lot of shit at the wall to see what fucking sticks. But there's enough things like this and a few other projects that I'm genuinely happy you gave these people money to make a thing that I think is actually good. I want to see more of this. I want to see more of this kind of creativity and very different stories or very different styles depicted. And as patrons of the arts, even though they're just literally doing it to keep subscriptions coming in, I'm kind of fucking happy they're doing it, and I'm kind of happy to keep my subscription going because of that.
They make a lot of shit.
They really fucking do.
They really do make a lot of shit.
Once in a while, something like this will come down the pike, and like, oh, great, they can produce genuinely good pieces of animation, genuinely good films. And it's not so much that Netflix made it, because Netflix just paid for it, but like, as long as they're willing to pay for things like this, I'm willing to keep my subscription just to see what they roll out.
There's always something like that where it's just like, if we use this thing anymore, but then you hear about, oh, here's like a dream team of creative people coming together making an idea that you would never have conceived of in your wildest dreams, and thought, okay, I guess one more.
Yeah,
it's always something like that, and then it's usually something that, oh, this is like, you know, it won't be common, it'll be airing now, but it gets stuck in Netflix jail.
The main thing that pissed me off is when the anime gets stuck in fucking Netflix jail for 6 months or whatever the fuck. It's like, it's coming out week by week. Just bring it out every week. And it's like, no, we'll bring it out when it's all fucking done. It's like, but I know it's going live in Japan, you motherfucker.
There's been insane things in that anime. We gotta wait for it. But I think coming all out in one glut, it can kind of, you can wait for so long, but then it all comes, and then you just sort of, you're not used to watching it, looking forward to it on a week by week basis. So you sort of lapse into
it. It was sheer madness to me when people finished Devilman Crybaby in a fucking weekend. I was like, what are you doing? Don't do that. Also, that's very upsetting. Don't watch that all in one weekend.
But not to get too far off at that point, for something maybe like one-off little animated features like this, which you know they won't cancel after the end of the second season, which is what they do, because they only want something long enough to get more people in the door. But you know, for something like this where you're in, you're out, and it's a satisfying little watch, and it's something that you can revisit again, because it doesn't require too much investment. It's like it's a nice, as well, good, like, just over 90 minute film. It's doesn't hang around, it gets everything in and out, no 2 hour like epics. It just has its story to tell, and it gets you in and out there, and that just makes it also much more conducive to a rewatch, say every December with your family.
Yes, absolutely. And with it being like a seasonal sort of film, next year they can kind of goose it back up to the top of the now playing charts, and new people will watch it, and new people will, you know, appreciate it and put that in their holiday rotation. So it'll build every couple of years until we just consider it one of the Christmas classics, like, you know, everything else. Like we'll probably get to it here in a few weeks, but like the new animated Grinch movie that just came out, like, that's on Netflix, and I wound up watching it two or three times over the Christmas Excellent. Season, and I think that's two or three times enough for a lifetime. I don't need to see that again, but I feel like I'm going to have to watch it at least one more time for this podcast. So look for that.
That's more your months. Unique God circumstances than general people's ones. Yeah,
yeah. That's more me than anything else. Mm. I don't know. It also just blows my mind that I looked at the box office numbers, and that film, that Grinch film, is the highest grossing Christmas movie ever made now.
Fucking really?
Hell. Yes. it finally something after 30 years finally beat Home Alone, and I don't know how I feel about that, but that's a discussion for another podcast.
Yeah.
So we do need to move on, though. So now is the time in the show where we discuss how we rank this film against our other films. So let's go over to the crankometer, where we rate these films on an X and Y axis. The X axis is how Christmassy the film is, and the Y axis is how good we found the film. So, gentlemen, how Christmassy, on a scale of -5 to 5, is Klaus?
Oh, it's got to be 4 or above, because it's literally the ur-text of Christmas, is the origin of the whole thing.
I love the fact
well,
that...
at least one origin.
I love the fact that our postman mentions, like, partway through the film, is like, oh shit, Christmas is coming up! Like, he suddenly remembers. It seems like it's not an important thing for it, but because it's doing the entire the theme of the holidays, where it's dour and grey and fucking shite out, and everyone's just really fucking miserable, but for different reasons in this film. And the way things get brighter and warmer and just fucking better. The general Christmas excuse for, hey, it's a reason to walk around with a fucking smile on your face because it's shite out, honestly. I feel like it does the Christmas feeling quite well, and it does my favorite thing about Christmas, which it removes religion entirely from the fucking holiday. And it's just about the sentiment of it rather than the Jesus of it, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose not so much the origin of Christmas as the religious ceremony, but as Christmas as in the season of goodwill.
Yeah, the season more so than the religion part of it. Yeah.
As well as I've mentioned, just the fact this is the animated thing, it's the way that they've made it is essential to conveying that warmth. If this was a CG thing, even it could be it could just as well creatively designed and so forth, it probably wouldn't feel just the same way. It wouldn't feel as, I don't know, warm and happy inside. Again, that's like it just allows me to concentrate more on this other things as well, like some of the background as well.
Oh, I was getting some really high definition Samurai Jack looking stuff. Yeah,
very much so. Because as I convey the starkness of the landscape, how it's very extreme with lots of very extreme environments here. It's also the beauty of it. It's just like very vast landscape, you know, there's not a lot of human civilization around, but it feels very remote, but it also feels very peaceful and beautiful. And you get the obligatory view of the Aurora Borealis as well, which is again very lovely rendered, and because of the lighting and so forth that they've used for the horse of the film, that is a really nice effect as well. It's just beautiful in a lot
even
of
though
ways.
It's mentioned as an afterthought in the plot and by a character as like, hey, Christmas is coming, I can use this to my advantage. I feel like just the general sentiment of the film and the fact that it is like you can see Christmas being slowly fucking crafted over the course of it. I'm going to give it like a 5.
I'm okay with that. I am perfectly okay with that because there are certain details and like the way the film builds the Christmas myth around this sort of plot. It just, I don't know. It works. It works in a way that makes you really, I guess, appreciate the way that it sort of weaves in these like moments of these acts of goodwill and for a purpose, not necessarily just for the sheer sort of cravenness of it, but also like little details. Like my favorite detail in the entire film is that the Christmas tree in the town square is a suspended whale skeleton that they've wrapped with Christmas lights. I love that.
That's so good. Yeah, yeah. It's nearly like they decided, we can't all hang giant fish up in our houses. How about a tree? It's nearly like they work backwards from the talk. Because initially, like, the whale at the start of the, or near the start of the film, is like this huge foreboding thing as you're coming into town. It's like, Jesus Christ, that's terrifying.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then at the end, it's like, oh, that's Christmas lovely. Thing. They decorated the whale bones.
Yeah, Christmas can make anything look nice and inviting. Yeah, even goths celebrate Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. You can wrap Christmas lights around fucking anything.
And it would look good, yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Try it in your own home. So yeah, I'm amenable to a five. This is very Christmassy. Like, it definitely gets into the bones of what Christmas is all about as far as the modern holiday goes, and that's great. And I think the only way they could make this more Christmassy would be like if they tried to work in the quote unquote reason for the season, but that would kind of just ruin the whole magic trick, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just leave that alone.
And the fact that they like include like the Sami people are also involved in this, and it's like, yeah, you don't have to be like fucking a Jesus getter to fucking get yourself a present or enjoy sharing things or enjoy like that. Obviously, the Sami people kind of come in and decide it's like, yeah, we're gonna fucking get in on this. This seems really cool. It's not even about... These are people who don't speak your fucking language and have very different cultural norms and everything, but they is like, yeah, this seems nice, let's do that. And that's kind of a very Christmassy thing as well. Because when you say Merry Christmas and someone else says Happy Holidays, it's like, that's nice, thank you. I hope I do have a happy holiday. Yeah, that's great.
It's perfectly fine. The holidays should be for exactly. everybody.
Yeah, kindness and compassion should not be determined
limited
by
to people who look and sound like
geography
you.
Or heritage or anything like that.
Right. Merry Christmas should never ever be weaponized.
Jesus, no. Yeah.
Fuck's sake.
Sorry, I keep taking Jesus' name in vain. It's just fucking Irish upbringing. I'm not very religious. I just can't fucking shake it.
I know we used to have listeners who complained about that, but I think we lost them, so I think it's okay.
Well, I mean, we're just talking about St. Nicholas here and bigging him up. He's a cool dude.
Of course. Why not? So I think we're all in agreement that this film deserves a 5 on the Christmas quotient.
Let's
move over to the y-axis and the quality. How good do we think this film is? And I'm willing to bet this is also a very high score. I'm willing to say at least a 4.
Let's give it a 4. I'd be somewhere around on a 3.5 to a 4 because it's very entertaining. As mentioned, there's those things in this, again, you'll expect. You probably won't be surprised too much by some of the developments in the story. But the sentiment is very earnest and genuine. And that puts it up a couple of notches just for that alone.
The animation also is just absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Like, there's that cannot be overstated. This is a film you watch because first of all, you want to see a fun Christmas film, but also just the animation is very unique in 2019, 2020. So
yeah,
definitely check that out. It's worth it. And I think
that's like how they tell it as well. I mean, that's like the animation is a part of that. They decided this is the way we want to portray this. It'd be difficult. It's not exactly everybody's cup of tea nowadays, but this is the way we want to do it. It's essential to how we get that spirit across. And I've done that so admirably.
Like, I give this a 4, but it pushes it to a 5 just sheer on fucking animation alone for me, because you know the amount of fucking times I watch like animatics and fucking shit from this film specifically, it's like that kind of shit really fascinates me. They've got like 3 different separate layers, like ones for the line work and their kind of shape tweening of lines, and I was just like, oh, that's fascinating, because I know that kind of tech. But then the stuff for color and how it fills in that the color and shading works a little differently, but it uses like masks. But the fucking the tech for the volumetric lighting and the painting stuff. I was looking at one there and it was just like, it's a very simple fucking animation scene, and there was like 5 different layers for the different paint textures they were putting on our main character, and I was just like, that's an unnecessary amount of it, but it was just gorgeous to watch. And the 2 things of this film is I'm watching it and I'm getting kind of lost in, it's like, this thing looks fucking amazing, and I'm looking at how the shots are breaking down, but then it pulls me into the fucking story and I forget to watch the animation and watch the how they do a certain thing. And that's very good, because if I'm paying attention to the technical quality of it, but it's so good technically that I'm getting pulled into the fucking movie, that's an extra fucking point for me. I gotta give it 5.
That's the kind of depth they were going for in a literal and figurative sense.
That in itself is its own magic trick, definitely. I can't argue against the 5.
If you want to go 4, I think that's entirely appropriate. 4 is solid. Absolutely.
Go a little lower, always leave room for improvement.
That's fair.
Because I'm thinking of like the long game of this year, and if we start at a 5-5, I don't know where we can go from here.
That's fair enough, too. Yeah, yeah. I I'm not insulted or anything by 4. Don't get me wrong. I just myself, I got to go 5. That's, yeah.
No, But you're absolutely right. It's a wonderful piece of animation, and it's a very elegantly sort of told story. And I appreciate all of that, especially with some of the junk that we've seen on this show in the last year. Like I think even the last time you guys were on the show, you called this like a breath of fresh air, like to have an animated film so good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really do appreciate all the hard work that went into this film, and I love it to pieces. And I guess, yeah, well, let's just go ahead and say it. It's a 5-4, because I really do worry that if we set that precedent now, something terrible's going to happen on this show.
If you want to put it at 4, your and co-host depending on what else up. You come across, you're like, actually, no, retroactively, that was a 5. My mistake.
Your co-host didn't turn up. You don't get a say if it's going a little bit too far in one direction for them. So, no,
yeah,
sorry, guys.
Our dissenting opinion, the one who is always here to bring I don't want to say bring the negativity, because that sounds mean, but just the one who can give us a little dose of reason is not here. So we're not in our right minds.
Oh, I'm entirely unreasonable. I'm still fucking caught up for the season. This just from watching this recently for the podcast. Yeah.
Absolutely. So yeah, this is a 5. This is a solid 5-4 on our crankometer, and that's where it's going to have to stay for now. We reserve the right to change the score later.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Booker, you have your homework for the new crankometer for this year. And
thank you, Booker.
Gentlemen, so this is at the end of the show here. Is there anything you guys would like to plug? What's new for Secret of the Sailor Madness in 2020?
What's new indeed? Well, this it kind of was mentioned earlier on, but we're back. We're leaner and less meaner. We're talking about cartoons, but from a standpoint of enjoying watching cartoons and trying not to go crazy. Cartoons have kind of always just been there as a comfort, as something to help you unwind, hopefully after maybe a tough day or a week or whatever like that. But also, they give a kind of greater context for our own lives. So we've kind of been going off new places. We looked recently at an adaptation of Treasure Island, a Robert Louis Stevenson book made into a TV series and then later a compilation film. Really good stuff there. And we're kind of following that course as well, and we're talking about Treasure Planet really soon.
Yes.
Which our boy Mr. Pablo said worked on as well. So we're going to see that side of the story and what they bring to that old tale. And that can all be found at secretofthesailormadness.com or on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher.
And if this film didn't come out, my talking of Treasure Planet would have been very like, oh, I lament what animation could have become, if only, because it did. There's still a fucking chance. Okay, so it's going to be way less dour from me talking about that.
Yeah,
it became this, yes.
Yeah, because we've been talking about looking at that for the longest time, and that's just the arrival of this has sort of changed the perspective on that.
It's way more positive.
So we've got about that. What else have we got? I suppose besides that, run on the social media. You can find me at least on Twitter at Nicholas Cage. That is NILLCOLH_Cage. Hopefully being equally as positive about cartoons and following my own advice about how to approach them and talk about them.
I'm on Twitter at I_M_D. On there, just fucking liking and retweeting and commenting bullshit. I need to actually make my own fucking content, man. And other than that, we're on a weekly anime podcast talking about stuff that's on in the week called Let's Go. Over on Dynamite in the Brain.
It's we post it on our own site sometimes, but also be found at dynamiteinthebrain.com and also on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and other things like that. So give a look there too. You can listen to us on a weekly basis.
Fantastic, yes. And if you want to hear more from me, I also run a podcast called The OST Party, where we talk about movie soundtracks. We just did a Dumb and Dumber episode, and my co-host is still very angry at me for that.
Oh, really?
Oh, she did not enjoy it at all, though.
I feel like it's not going to age well.
Probably not.
It did not, as a matter of fact. But it was a fun time anyway, so go check that out at OST Party on Twitter. Ladies and gents, that'll do it for Christmas Creeps this week. We will be back in a few weeks with another fantabulous episode. You can email us any questions or comments or listener requests, anything you want to see us do in the new year at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at Christmas Creeps. Also, we're back on facebook.com/Christmas Creeps as well. That's going to have to do it. And all I can say for the future of Christmas Creeps this year is stay tuned because we have a lot of fun stuff to get to. So we hope everybody is having a pleasant January, and we will see you in February. Good night, everybody.
Ta-ta.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.